Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the 5th of the 11th. I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Michael Dwyer. Today, a new Project Veritas release that shows an ABC presenter talking about Jeffrey Epstein, his crimes, her thoughts on his apparent suicide, and alleging that she had the details of the Epstein story years ago and was told not to pursue it. The Children's Hospital contractor has submitted a new claim for costs, which is see the cost of the hospital going over 2 billion euro. I would hate to say I told you so, but we did tell you so. I believe the phrase was, there's no way in hell this building is coming under 2 billion.
Yeah, you really hate it. Having to say I told you so, I know it breaks your heart.
The government has announced that it is considering laws to regulate political advertisements online. And finally, On Task has called on Leo to clarify, by which they mean apologise in a grovelling fashion, for his remarks on climate change during the week. We may as well start with the Epstein story, Michael, because that's the, to be fair, that's the one you're going to hear the least about on the Irish media.
Well, I suppose, well, God, Epstein, one feels almost a little, it's a little bit tinfoil hat talking about Jeffrey Epstein, isn't it? Although you have to wonder when you get as far as the situation where you have Hillary actually joking straight out that she didn't kill Jeffrey Epstein, that there's...
It does feel a little tinfoil hat. However, I would say on the other hand, the BBC is now reporting on the Project Veritas leak. They just started reporting on it about 30 minutes ago. So now we're into good, decent journalism, Michael.
We are indeed. Well, and if the BBC's talking about it, well, then it has to be talked about.
So to give an idea of what happened here, for those who aren't aware, Jeffrey Epstein was a billionaire pedophile who effectively made his living, shall we say, setting up other men with girls, some of whom were quite young, and then by all appears to have then blackmailed them. And he was picked up, and then he tragically committed suicide after the camera outside his jail cell stopped working and the guards on duty fell asleep.
Now, it's worth commenting just en passant. He was connected with everybody. He was enormously well connected. Nobody really seemed to know where his money came from. All they knew was that he had lots and lots of it. He was almost the sum total of everything disgusting and disreputable you could find in one human being. He was a procurer, a panderer, a pedophile, an abuser, a blackmailer.
And I mean, Michael, worse than all of that, the hypocrisy.
Oh, the hypocrisy, Gary. That's the worst of it, really.
No, actually, you cannot say Jeffrey Epstein was a hypocrite about wanting to have sex with young women. This is a man who named his private jet the Lolita Express.
Yeah, I mean...
So, I mean, at that point...
There's a certain amount of hiding in plain sight going on, all right. Anyway, the moment... I think that if you cast your mind back, the moment he went into custody, all over the internet, people started speculating how long would it be before his body was found in the cell with the locked door hanging from the toilet or whatever it was. There was immediately, and then it was only a couple of days, wasn't it? He was in custody for a couple of days.
He was not there a long time.
He really wasn't there a long time. And it was announced his body, he'd been found and he'd taken his own life.
Yeah, sorry, it wasn't, I was actually wrong, Michael. It wasn't that the camera outside his cell broke. There was an initial report that said the camera outside his cell broke, so I want to apologise for repeating that inaccurate information. It was in fact two cameras outside his cell that a boat malfunctioned when he, immediately prior to his death. There was also then the...
There was a case of the fact that he's on suicide watch, but somebody was supposed to come in and didn't, and somebody was ill, and then there was an ambulance that arrived in the middle of the night to take, but didn't take anybody away.
It was, shall we say, an all-round spectacularly weird scenario.
It was, and it was one of those. There was one tweet I can remember happening a few days where some journalist or commentator who generally speaking be known for being a bit of a dry type and a bit wet, I think a progressive, American progressive, said, "Dear Internet, you know that normally I would say to you, for God's sake, calm down, get a hold of yourself, be sensible. Well, today I'm going to take the next 24 hours off. So you just have at it." Because even the most sensible people were going, really? The camera's failed, the guard is sick, and he's found hanging in his cell.
Then we have the an autopsy is done, and they say it's suicide. The family hire their own medical professional, who is a quite well-known medical... I'm actually not sure what the term is. Coroner? Medical coroner?
Yeah, coroner. Forensic... expert in forensic medicine.
So he was a guy called Dr. Michael Baden.
Autopsy.
And he said that the injuries Jeffrey Epstein had to his neck were inconsistent with a hanging suicide, that they're found in a small amount of hanging suicides, but you would usually see them in homicides.
Right. Anyway, the story that we're talking about is a more recent one, which is when a nice lady on ABC is caught on a hot mic. The Good Morning America co-anchor, Amy Robach, was talking to a producer on a hot mic and said how frustrated she was.
Yeah, it looks like they broke for a commercial break and they're having just a private conversation about it. And she is outraged that she got scooped.
Yeah.
Because she had all this 3 years ago and she was told to drop it.
But this is the kicker. The reason why the network decided not to run it was, we're told, by Politico, this is, after being pressured by Buckingham Palace.
That's the great thing about where... Because you're like, what could have stopped ABC News, one of the premier news channels in America, and a fairly high quality all round, from stopping this? And on the tape, she says that they were worried they'd lose an interview with the royals.
Yeah. Now, all we can say is that Epstein was associated with a member of the royal family and had flown on a number of occasions with this person. I'm not going to name the person. Gary can if he likes.
Oh, yeah, it was Prince Andrew.
I didn't name the person.
Gary, yeah, he was. The person. Yeah, it was. He was alleged to have taken part in various things, including an orgy on Jeffrey Epstein's private island.
Alleged by Gary, not by me.
Actually, I took that from a headline on The Independent, the British Independent, so I think I'm okay.
Well, if you're going to quote that kind of tabloid rag, you know, you're taking your life into your own hands.
I would also say that the Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, has said he didn't do that.
Well, then I think that we accept that.
Which is interesting, because I'm pretty sure in the Project Veritas leak, the presenter says that they had photos. It's also worth mentioning that Epstein was quite closely linked with Bill Clinton. And when Bill Clinton was asked to explain, following Epstein's arrest, this, he gave them a list and said, well, these are the times I flew on his plane and there were Secret Service with us all the way. And then it subsequently turned out that Bill Clinton knew Jeffrey Epstein significantly longer than he had said. And I believe he said he flew on the plane 4 times. And it was actually fairly well into double figures.
I think it ended up, the number in my head is 22.
It's 20 something.
But listen, I may be wrong. It is one of those...
Oh, he was also a convicted pedophile. It's weird that it took us that long to mention that. He is actually a convicted pedophile. Not just an alleged pedophile.
Jeffrey Epstein, that is.
Yeah.
It's one of those wonderful stories. Eventually, if there is actually something to it, it will, I imagine, come out. These things have a way of leaking and seeping. It's very hard to keep a secret when you've got more than one person involved.
It is, but I mean, there is another Project Veritas video from, it looks like the same commercial break, where they're asking her, someone who's investigated Jeffrey Epstein this much, if she thinks he killed herself. And there's a very clear sort of explanation of, no, that's a ridiculous idea. Epstein was not going to kill himself. So this is, I did, I assume, Michael, you may have missed this because you're not terribly online, as the kids would say. You may have missed all of this subbing Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself into every possible thing.
Oh, yes.
From photos to songs to poetry. Did you see the video of the guy on Fox News? He was brought on. He has a charity for dogs, military dogs, yeah, yeah, that have been retrained.
And he was talking about these dogs. It's worth watching because it's a very good charity. And these dogs have particular needs and need a particular kind of family. Because they have come from a certain kind of training. And he talks away and talks away. Then, utterly nonchalantly, the very last thing. What's the last thing? And
Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. And then the Fox presenter just laughs. And we'll have more on that later.
Yeah, not Jeffrey. It's a good story.
It's a wonderful video. It's the sort of, we're finished here. Can I just have a quick PSA? Yeah, sure, if you're quick. And then, dog, Epstein didn't kill himself.
I'm amazed that...
I don't know. On one hand, I don't think it would be terribly surprising if Epstein had been murdered. But on the other hand, life sometimes goes like that. And there's just a combination of absolute carelessness and random fluke. And remember, this is the American jail system.
Yeah.
And someone just ends up being able to kill themselves. So, and people find that really offensive because the thing about conspiracy theories is that they put order on the world.
Yes, we are animals that are designed and have evolved to seek patterns. We seek patterns and we seek meaning. And where there is, we find it very uncomfortable to live in chaos.
I mean, the idea that Jeffrey Epstein gets tried of his crimes and takes everyone down with him appeals to us because it's justice. The idea that Jeffrey Epstein is murdered in order to hide those crimes also appeals to us because it ties into ideas of corruption, yes, and things like that. Yes. The idea that Jeffrey Epstein just decides he's going to kill himself and through a combination of incompetence and technical issues is able to pull it off, it's kind of offensive because it just happens and then no one wins here.
Everybody, well, I should rephrase that. People on the fringes of politics or culture, whether it's the left or the right, always construct these conspiracy explanations. They, depending on whether you're left or right, they tend to have different shapes. Are different, not shapes actually, the shapes are fairly similar, but the memes and the themes tend to be fairly similar. And one which exists both on the left and the right is the idea of a shadowy, all-knowing, all-seeing organization that comes together. And one of the things that always I've always liked is, have you ever noticed, Gary, when all these groups get together, they always have to write a manifesto.
I mean, Michael, as someone who's written a political party's manifesto, there is a bit of a joy in it.
So, yeah.
And then it goes to committee and it becomes the greatest pain in the ass you have ever had to suffer through.
But, like, going back to, the elders of Zion, they all get together and then all these world-dominating Jewish bankers get together and write the elders of Zion, which is a really, really weird thing to write if you're a Jewish banker, because you think, fuck lads, I wouldn't have written this if I was a Jewish banker, because it's kind of going to get me in trouble.
But I don't, like, in this case, is it even a conspiracy theory?
It's not really, it's perfectly believable that somebody like Jeffrey Epstein would have been murdered. The problem is that it's been put into the context, which is so perfectly the context. It's like a locked room mystery, you know? And he's been put into a locked room mystery, so you're being challenged. Now, from the prison's point of view, we'll allow that this actually is just what it is. The prison's point of view, they're embarrassed, but for them, it's certainly a much better outcome to say that the man committed suicide than to let people go around saying, well, maybe he was murdered, because That would now, then they have to explain how somebody managed to break into their prison, then into his cell, kill him, and then break out of the prison again, which really doesn't make them look like efficient people at all. I don't know. Is this mad? Is this a conspiracy theory? It is bizarro world, certainly.
But it is an interesting story now. So, from children onto other children.
Oh.
The Children's Hospital.
The Children's Hospital that keeps giving and giving.
The contractors for the Children's Hospital
yeah.
have put in a new claim of costs.
Really? And because the government has been pursuing a vigorous policy of oversight and paring, those costs have come down.
Sorry, I should have said additional costs. That would have given that game away.
Additional costs? No, I'm sorry, Gary. That would seem to imply that the costs were going up. And yet we know the costs are not going up because Leo said they wouldn't.
Did you know that there was a resignation recently from the hospital's board?
Was there?
Do you know who resigned?
Tell me who resigned, Gary.
The chief procurement officer of the Irish government.
Well, I mean, fair.
As he was unable to flag the cost spiral of the hospital.
Well, in fairness, it's hardly his job or his expertise as chief procurement officer to be involved in the buying things for hospitals, Gary. I mean, let's be fair.
I do like the idea of, like, a very senior civil servant being put on this. It's a very prestigious board. I mean, if you were the person who could bring this under control,
yeah,
that's your career for the future. You're golden. And you go on it for a while, and then you just sort of go, I'm out of here, lads. Like, I'm not even waiting for project completion here. I just don't want to be here when it's finished.
Yeah, but Gary, you have to remember that we're talking about a board here which is one of the great boards of recent Irish political life. If you cast your mind back, this is one of my favourite facts about this government. If you remember when the first massive overruns were kind of being confirmed and people were desperately trying to work out whose fault it was, and was Harris, and Harris was running for the hills and all that, our dear friend in finance, Pascal, said, I knew nothing about it. I wasn't told. It was not communicated to me. At which point we were forced to observe that there was actually somebody who was on the board, but there purely in a personal capacity, who was the secretary to the Department of Finance.
Why was your secretary on the board? For personal reasons.
He was there for fun, Gary. He was there for fun.
Yeah. And I couldn't be expected to know because the secretary was only there for personal reasons and therefore wouldn't have mentioned it to me.
He wasn't there ex officio.
He must have an incredible personal life, though. I mean, imagine what sort of qualifications or hobbies or things he has.
I'll tell you what he doesn't have. Much of a private life. And I'd say if he has a marriage, it's in trouble, because if you're the kind of man who goes from being the Secretary General in the Department of Finance and for fun decides to take over a job on the board of the largest public works project in the country, when you imagine you don't have much free time to begin with, but because you're doing it in a private capacity, you never mention it to the Minister for Finance that the thing is running a billion over price. I mean, I'm not pretending to laugh here. I'm amusing myself saying this. It is so brilliant, that story. I think that didn't get half enough coverage. So anyway, at the moment, I think Alan Kelly is the man again.
So it looks like someone has leaked something to Alan Kelly, because the government was refusing to talk about. We knew that new claims for costs had been put in by BAM, who are the people who are constructing the hospital. But the government had refused to talk about it, saying that was commercially sensitive information.
Yeah, commercially sensitive.
Kelly.
That was Harris's Kelly. Sorry, we can't. It's commercially sensitive, which is bullshit.
So Kelly is saying that he has things which indicate that not only are the claims in going to bring this over $2 billion in cost, but that the claims are legitimate on the face of them.
And therefore the government will have to accept them.
It looks like there is additional work that had to be carried out that was not put in the project spec.
And that's the figure that's going around in the ether is 2.1. Is that what you're hearing?
Well, that was what I think that was what I was told by people. So I know when we talked to Jimmy Sheehan last year, that was kind of the figure he thought it would get to. And then I talked to a couple of other people who had some connections to it, and they kind of said that was where they thought it was going as well.
If it's 2.1 now, then we can be fairly confident that it will not finish at 2.1.
I don't know, because when I talked to Jimmy Sheehan, it was only on about 1.6.
Mm.
So this might be the figure they're actually able to put it in, or it could be it's going to go upwards again. But if you remember from that interview, he said one of the things with hospitals is they have to be built in a certain time frame, or the technology changes, and hospitals are in many senses built around the technology. So if the technology changes, you have to redesign.
Yes.
And if you have to redesign, well, then you're going off scope. And if you're going off scope, you're going to get additional costs. So I wouldn't be terribly surprised if that's what's happened here.
Have you noticed Alan Kelly has consistently been scooping the government for the last...
He has. He has some fantastic sources.
I tell you, for it's not a personal reasons, but policy and political or whatever. Not a guy that I could ever really warm to. But I have to grudgingly admit, number one, he has broken some really great stories and really nailed the government on quite a few... On the guards, justice issues, on the hospital, on other stuff. Also, I have come in... You know when you come in the middle of an interview on the radio and you don't know who's talking and you listen and you think, this guy is actually really good. This guy has a serious grip and he's making the right points. Very often politicians, in my opinion, I'm sure they would probably say the same about me if they gave a damn, that they get distracted by inconsequential points or they miss the central issue or whatever. He doesn't. He has a really good sense. And I'm listening to this and you think, God, that guy's good. And it turns out, Alan Kelly. That's happened to me more than once. Whether or not the party is regretting putting Brendan in as leader, because Brendan hasn't been doing a whole hell of a lot. Which again surprised me, because Brendan Howland, I would have always rated as one of the most competent politicians in the Dáil. And not just because he's a Wexford man, thank God. But that he's always been good at what he did. But he's not, maybe not much energy. But Kelly, he has some tremendous sources.
He also has the great advantage that when you speak in the Dáil, you're covered by parliamentary privilege.
Of course, yes.
So you can't be sued for defaming anyone or for saying something that's incorrect. So if you were to give some of that information to a journalist, they might have to verify before they're certain enough to actually go forward.
Yeah.
Whereas Kelly can just do it. He can do enough verification that he thinks it's right, that it's worth raising. Whereas a journalist would probably have to go far beyond that.
He can work on the basis that he knows the person. He makes a judgment call regarding their honesty or reliability. And if he knows that they're in the position to know the stuff and they're not lying, he can fire. A journalist maybe would require at least one other source to confirm it. And, you know, sometimes there just aren't others. Listen, Gary, I don't think this is the end of the story. It's going to run and run. And I don't want to be, you know, constantly cribbing about it. Genuinely do not feel that the Children's Hospital has really fully been exposed. The nature and the scandalous nature of its planning and execution have been fully forensically exposed in the press. I think I meet too many people who are able to say to me, that's what happens. You get a big project. There's always overruns. It always happens. He probably should have been paying more attention, but you know, what can you do? They've managed, if there are still people out there who believe that's the actual story, that it's just one of those things, I think that's to be indicative of a failure of the media to forensically expose the nature of this scandal. The future.
Leo has been called to apologise for his remarks by OnTask. And his remarks, if you missed them the first time, he said that, and this is his full quote, he was launching the climate action plan. Sorry, the progress report on the climate action plan. And he said, it's interesting to see that there can be pluses and minuses as well. Like, actually, one thing that we definitely face as a result of climate change is warmer winters. We've already experienced warmer winters, and that means using less energy because it's warmer, and people use less heating, and also that means fewer deaths as a result of cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on, and he says, but it's interesting when you do look at these things that there is a ledger, and there are benefits, and there are downsides. The downsides outweigh the benefits, but we need to be fully aware of the benefits too.
Yeah.
And OnTask said that this is talking about climate change in terms of a ledger where there are more or less equal benefits and downsides to climate breakdown betrays a reckless disregard for science. That statement demonstrates a reckless disregard for reading, because that's not what Leo said. He openly said the costs outweigh the benefits.
Yes.
And then they say, we very much doubt our Taoiseach, a medical doctor, would feel there are two sides to the ledger about the health effects of smoking. There actually are. Similarly, it is unlikely he believes we should allow anti-vaccine activists to claim two sides of the ledger to the benefits of mass vaccination. The weird thing there is, in both of those cases, there are absolutely two sides. Likewise, you can say, well, there were some benefits to both, but the costs massively outweighed them. So, for instance, there are people who have adverse reactions to vaccines. I don't mean that in a conspiratorial, every child who have it is, who is vaccinated is going to become autistic or go mad.
No.
Or catatonic. But there are legitimately people who have been shown to have adverse reactions to certain vaccines. That is a cost of the program. The benefit of the program is massively increased public health. But there is a cost and there is a benefit. Smoking, at the same time, really great for public finances. Really great for the health service because smokers die younger and therefore don't cost as much when they're alive. I would also suspect there are certain illnesses that smoking was actually good for.
Well, very, very, very few, but ulcerative colitis.
Yes, that was the one I was thinking of. Head lice as well, apparently.
It is much, much lower levels of ulcerative colitis amongst people who smoke than people who are non-smokers. Also, and here's one which people forget, air travel.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the air in the aeroplanes significantly declines after the banning of smoking in airplanes.
Oh.
Yeah, because when you used to have smokers at the back of the plane, for a start, you had quite strong extractions so that actually other people in the plane weren't bothered by the smoke. But you had to that air was expelled, and they had to recirculate fresh air in the cabin with oxygen, fresh oxygen. When smoking stopped, they stopped doing that. They didn't have to carry extra oxygen or whatever it was, and they simply recirculate. They basically recirculate the air in the cabin, which obviously, as the flight goes on, the quality of the air deteriorates. So you actually have you when you people are smoking in planes, the air was nicer. But these are small benefits.
But that's the thing. They still exist. So we can say there was less head lice when people smoked. And some will go, and are you saying that was worth the massively increased rates of cancer? To which you go, no, absolutely not.
However,
But it did happen.
Yeah, it did happen. And we should also remember that actually, when it comes to the issue of climate change, in many cases and in many places, what the long-term outcomes are going to be is not clear. Now, there are people who would say, and apparently there is some science behind this, that higher levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere available for plants actually will produce higher levels of fertility and higher levels of production. That environmentally available carbon dioxide is like a fertilizer. And if you go to For example, if you go to tunnels, plastic tunnels, regardless, that they actually have, they stimulate, they have higher levels of CO2 in the air because it produces it for good. We know that historically, there have been times in the planet when the levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere were higher than they are now, and the planet was covered more completely in vegetation than it is today. Generally speaking, warmer means wetter, and warm and wet is good for growing things, whereas cold and dry is bad for growing things. So it's not necessarily that if we're going to have a warmer, wetter planet, what you may find is that certain places have problems, and other places, it's possible that we might see, for example, the Sahara might bloom once again.
Yeah, there's very little research on the actual potential upsides of climate change. I did read a study, it was a number of years ago, and it was on the greening of Siberia.
Uh-huh.
I was basically making the argument that actually there could be a massive winner. I've always found it deeply suspicious about climate change that there's less work on who would win, because changes in global weather patterns must have a winner. In the same way that a war has a winner, there are people who benefit from wars. No matter how bad something is, someone will find opportunity in it. But you don't see that with climate change. Now, I've seen the odd study that says, in this particular case, this will benefit.
Yeah, one of the problems with climate change generally, and I don't want to get into the issue of climate change, what you have very often is a situation where people whose expertise is in climatology move from climatology to economics. And when they say, well, this is what the climate is going to do, and therefore we need to do X, Y, and Z. But all they need to do is tell us what the climate is going to do. Now, so far, their predictive models, frankly, have not been massively impressive. So they should get those better. As regards what we should do in response to climate change, I don't see that a climatologist has any particular expertise in that. And if we look at the Paris Accord, one thing that seems to be fairly clear, even if we spend the vast, and we're talking vast money, that would be required to achieve the Paris Accord's aims, which would still only result in 0.9 degrees of a change, positive change for global warming, is it not at least possible, and I would say perhaps likely, that if we were to spend that money not on ameliorating potentially the effects, rather the actual change in the temperature, but rather investing in technologies and in structures that will adapt to the changed circumstances, that it might be a much more effective way of spending your money.
Do you find, like, this idea that there can be no, well, firstly on task, by saying, you know, when they say that Leo seems to think there's equal benefits and downsides, is a nonsensical point. It's not even what he said.
It's not even a straw man, but that's what they do all the time. It's.
But this refusal to say, this must be all bad all the time for 100% of the people. There can be not one person in not one unique situation in one unique area who will benefit in any way from this.
Absolutely.
And there's an overtone of it, like a religious thing to it.
Deeply religious.
But also, it's if you can't look at something and go, and can't give an objective reckoning of it, then why should you be trusted to give your opinion on it? And if you think that there can be no possible benefit to anyone of something, there are very few things in the world that are totally without benefit.
Right now, if you were to listen to the advocates, shall we say, the most prominent advocate on the climate issue, like Greta Thunberg, etc., their position is the only acceptable positive position is no change in temperature, no change in climate. Now,
yeah, well, they're not getting that.
Yeah, but I don't understand, Gary, why axiomatically that's true. I need someone to show me that that what they're saying is that the climate that we have right now is climate optimus. that there is no better climate than the climate that we have had for the last 150 or 200 years, 300 years, whatever it is. That this is the perfect climate, and we must do everything we possibly can do to maintain that climate. Even if the climate itself is a dynamic thing, it would probably change anyway, but leaving that aside, I don't see there's any reason to believe that we are necessarily living in this perfect climate. I want someone to show, and not to show me that we're going to lose 10 or 20 coral atolls in the South Seas, but something that shows that the outcomes of climate change are worth sacrificing the kind of economic growth that will save 100 or 200 million lives in the next 20 years. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about people dying or people living. I mean, we know that there is a pretty strong connection between growth in economies and poor economies and lifting those economies out of poverty, and that by doing that, you will actually save people's lives. I don't think that the debate on either climate change or on the advantages or disadvantages, for example, the ability to grow grapes and make wine in Ireland, if we get it a little bit warmer, obviously that would be a wonderful thing. But we'll see. That is a debate that which will rumble on and on and on. We, however, will rumble on and on and on until we get to Monday, or Sunday rather, where we will be back with our usual whimsical Sunday miscellany. Until then, I would bid all of our dear listener adieu and have a good week.
All the best.